Welcome to Makers Figuring It Out, a show where we strive to educate, motivate, inspire makers of all skill levels with special guest makers, tips and tricks, do's and don'ts, and many things in between. And helping me figure it out, as always, is my good friend Jacob from Native Sunboard Art. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
You know, it's been a good week. I will say that. It's been a good
Yeah.
week. Yep, I have my buddy, one of my best friends is up visiting. This weekend, he's actually in the audience. He just was.
Yes, we have a live studio
We
audience
have
this
a
time,
live
huh?
studio audience for the first time in our lives.
That budget is really kicking in.
It really is, you know. And next week, my son and daughter-in-law are coming, and they're bringing my little grandson, so I get to meet him
Awesome.
for the first time. So
That's great.
everything is coming up, Steve, this week.
Nice. Like
Yep.
that. Yeah, I see what you did
You see what I'm doing right
there.
there, huh?
Yeah, I got you. Which, I mean, what better way to segue into our guest? I mean, a man that really does need no introduction other than just his name, the one and only Steve Ramsey from Woodworking from Mere Mortals.
Why don't you
Hi,
take
Steve. How you
that?
doing?
Great. Feel free to do any kind of flowery introduction you like. I'm perfectly down with
Flowery.
that.
Well, we can re-record this and make it even more flowery, but
Yeah, no, let
we know
no,
you're a busy
we're
man.
And I've been curious, honestly, with from where you started and like the beginning of YouTube essentially, and like the amount of subscribers that you had, the amount of notoriety and call a spade fame that you've acquired, does it make you uncomfortable when people kind of give you those accolades? Is it still a bit awkward, or have you kind of gotten used to it?
It has its awkwardness at times, I guess. I just know it's coming from a genuine place of interest in what I do, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good because we'll be kissing your butt through the entire series, show. So,
Ooh.
not that kind. But yes. So our guest for this week is Woodworking for Mere Mortals, the infamous Steve Ramsey, and we appreciate you coming on to the show, Steve. We
Oh,
know
I'm
you
excited.
we know you have a busy schedule, but I do like your motto is say yes to everybody instead of saying no.
I've kind of just determined that, came across that idea maybe 7, 8 years ago, and it's really served me well, because there seems to be a big movement anymore of, you got to learn to say no. You have to say no to, and of course there's times when life is just so busy and I've got too many things to do and I have to say no to something. But more times than not, I try to rephrase that of like, I would like to do this with you. Can we reschedule it? Can we do something at a later time, rather than just automatic? Because you get into these habits of where you just say no to so many things, and I think that the world would be better off if we all said yes to more things.
Right.
So I try to live that way.
Well,
Oh,
we
yeah,
appreciate you
definitely.
coming on. Definitely. When I talk
We're
to our,
glad you said yes to coming on the podcast. Let's just put it
most
that way.
definitely. Oh, you got
yeah,
it.
because I remember I asked our friends from the because we make podcasts. I'm like, how the hell did you get Steve Ramsey? And Vince just said, I asked.
Yes,
I
yeah.
was like, man, what the hell? I'm like, where? How did you ask? And where did you ask? Because I. It's weird not to know where to, ask people, because some people use only Instagram, some people only use Facebook, some people have email addresses, and it's kind of hard because there are some people on Instagram that don't ever read their DMs. It's just
Yeah.
they don't look at them because it's just there's just so many of them and they couldn't answer them all. And I know I've been not ghosted, but I've sent some, requests out to other people and never heard back, never said, never got a, hey, call me when you're, this month, or, I'm sorry, dude, I can't do it. So, but
Yeah.
it's just part of the game. It's
Yeah,
part of the game, Neil.
always try two different methods. If one doesn't work, try another method to get a hold of somebody. I'm a big believer in just reaching out to people, and if you want help with something, if you need to talk to somebody, just ask. And it really has served me well. And I believe just last week, there was a kid in high school kid in Nebraska, and just cold emailed me. I'd love to have you join my class. I have a presentation I had to do, and would you be willing to speak to my class? And so I was like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, so I can speak to his class, which it had like 12 people in it, I guess. And, you know, sure, I've got a lot of things I can do in my life, but to me, that's just like part of my job is to just kind of help spread the word about woodworking. And, you know, whenever I get a chance to talk about woodworking and YouTube, I'm down for it. I love it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we will be, you know, we will pick your brain as much as we can. And, you know, now that I know you're, you know, very approachable, I'm going to be sending you emails.
Can I be a regular on your show now? I'll just I'll be the third guy.
That'll work. You're hired.
You got to have like three guys, right? Isn't that?
Right. Yeah, we don't.
That's like the minimum. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't pay though.
Yeah. Oh, rats.
we don't pay. We don't pay well. We just, but you actually just started a podcast not too long ago yourself, right?
I did. Yeah. I started a podcast back in October. It's totally non-woodworking related. And it's just all about YouTube. And what we're doing is interviewing YouTubers YouTubers have been on the platform a long time, and just to hear their stories. And, you know, it kind of took us a while to figure out what the podcast was going to be about. It's with my friend Chad Reynolds. He and his wife produce a cleaning channel on YouTube, and I've known them for a long time. And during early stages of the lockdown last year in March and April, Chad and I were just talking to each other all the time on mm-hmm. Zoom. And then those conversations led to us thinking, you know, we talk a lot about YouTube. It's the one thing we have in common. We've both been doing this forever. And what if we, you know, just tried to make a podcast? And we didn't know what we were doing at all. We still don't know what we're doing, really. I'm just trying to figure it out. And I know it's just costing us a lot more money than we're not making any money off of it. But it's also the most exciting thing I think I've done in the past 12 years of being on YouTube. And it's just a blast. I love it.
It's something different, you know, because you can, I guess you can kind of get pigeonholed is the word that everybody is, and you're stuck kind of, you know, doing the same thing. And, you know, I mean, it's amazing that, not amazing that you're not that good, but it's amazing that you've lasted, you know, so many, 15 years on YouTube?
12 years on YouTube, yeah. And it's a common thing that's happening. I mean, we're really starting to see more and more YouTubers kind of dropping out and just, or, you know, closing that book of YouTube, as it were. We've been doing it for a while just because it just the grind of it. And I've experienced that in several different times. It's just burnout. I've kind of experienced that at the beginning of this year after doing last year, which was so much content I was putting out there, and then it just kind of eventually kind of falls on you, and you're like, I gotta make a change here. And I hate to even mention burnout, really. I don't like that because it comes from a real place of privilege, I guess. It's like, oh, look at me, I gotta take time off from making videos. Meanwhile, there's guys who are like working in coal mines, and there's guys who actually have to do real work for a living day in and day out and probably aren't complaining about it. So I try to put it into perspective, but yeah, there's definitely times when you gotta have a break.
We took a break for over the holiday season, because I was moving to Pennsylvania, which our listeners know. And second of all, I was starting to feel a little burnt out, not in the video sense, but emotionally, because there's a lot of changes going on in my life at that time. So it was a good thing.
I felt the same thing too when I was doing my move right before as well. And it wasn't that I was hating, you know, doing videos at that time as well. You know, with the stress of the move and working and acclimating to a new job and everything else like that, like the stress of, or the pressure of that I was imposing on myself to put out a video wasn't good at that point. So I said, let me just take a break, get my life situated. And then when I'm ready, I can, you know, transition back into content creation when I have the ability to, and it's not as stressful.
Yeah, we all put these kind of demands on on ourselves. And a lot of times it's just unreasonable demands. And back in the day on YouTube, it was really important. YouTube always wanted to tell everybody, you know, you gotta be consistent. You gotta produce, throw out content, more and more content. You gotta feed that beast. And for years I was doing project video every Friday. And you know, when you put it on the banner of your YouTube channel, new video every Friday, then you're like, right. Well, now I've committed myself to that. But it's an unreasonable and it's unsustainable to really do that for too long. To conceive of and to make and build a project, shoot video, edit the video and all that stuff in 1 week's time. What happens is you see that you start churning out content for the sake of content rather than really being pleased about what you're making. And that was kind of the trap that I was running into at the time.
And the quality of your, when it's a daily grind, the quality of the video can take a nosedive.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I've never prided myself on high quality videos anyway, so that I don't have too much to lose there, but I kind of set up a camera and shoot, but it's definitely, it can affect all of that. Yeah
definitely.
I like how you said in one video where you went over like 4K and like you have these 4K cameras on. It's like 1080 is fine for me. I don't really need more than that. And I appreciate that fact. Like, yeah, there's better resolution. There's quote unquote better tech and all these stuff, things that you could do, but like, no, this is actually fine. You really don't need to go any further than this. If you want to, that's cool, but you don't have to stress yourself out with having to go further. I mean, hell, I film all my stuff with my smartphone, and that's to me is well enough. And I've been able to get really decent quality, videos out of that. And how was it with doing the lockdown videos? Because we say about like not putting these stressors on us and like the self-imposed unrealistic demands, but that seemed like kind of an interesting segue into like going from doing a project video for whenever your schedule wanted to be to I'm gonna do a video every day
right
while we're in lockdown. How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, I fundamentally changed the whole focus of my channel, the whole course of my channel for a while I've been kind of getting away from just strict project-based videos. I think there's so many projects on YouTube that I don't know exactly what else I can add to that mix. So in March of last year, as soon as we went into lockdown, the first thing I figured is I needed something that was going to keep me completely occupied for a long time and keep my mind active. And as I got to thinking more about it, I thought and heard from more people who watch my show, and they were telling me that they just needed something to kind of while away the time and something to look forward to every day. And so I kind of took it upon myself to do this daily series, or almost daily series, as kind of, I felt like it was almost my job. It's like, okay, this is why I'm here. I'm here primarily for people to watch me, because I know most of the people watching my videos don't actually make any of those projects, but they like to watch it. And so to come out with a project every day was absolutely impossible. So I thought, well, I'll just go on this kind of woodworking journey. I mean, I know it's kind of a cliched expression, but I thought, let's take the audience along with me from my whole, how I conceive a project, how I design it, build it, and I can throw in other things along the way. It's just more of a talk to the audience and have the audience respond. In some ways, those projects became very collaborative efforts, because as I was building them, I would have time to speak to the audience if I was stumped on something. And my first project in that series was a printer stand I was making, and I was, kind of stumped how I was going to handle the doors, and I was asking for some advice. And wow, I mean, I got so many suggestions. And so all of these different suggestions would make their way into the project. And so it was just really cool, and it was a great experience just to see all these people kind of coming together for this one good. And that lasted for the better part of 2020, just kind of cranking out this daily content. And the other thing I noticed is that I got huge amounts of views, new subscribers and everything, because so many people were just stuck at home, and my course sales skyrocketed. For me, 2020 was, you know, the best year ever as far as sales go and finances. It was, you know, I think a lot of online businesses kind of thrived for that. But again, but like I knew all along that this is probably not going to be sustainable. I remember even mentioning that when I got posted my first one. I'm like, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to keep this going. But
yeah, I remember you saying that. And
yeah,
I was definitely one of those people that was following along with it, going with like the printer stand and then the workout equipment, the workout benches, which I really thought was cool too. And then like the closet and everything, and then getting into like the cat stuff and bubbles and Cobra.
Oh my God. Which, you do know that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was following like, and then like, I kind of started to drop off. I won't lie to you. Like as soon as my life started getting, busier, but yeah, it's, I think definitely a lot of, during that lockdown period, a lot of people turned to making as a form of distraction, which, you know, you see throughout history, anytime like, you know, Great Depression or, you know, great, you know, times of great sadness, people turn to distractions like movies and entertainment and stuff like that to keep themselves distracted so they don't have to focus on the bad that's going on. And I think a lot of people stuck at home turn to like home improvement and DIY and crafting to be able to give themselves and like learn a new skill or hobby. And I was telling people in a group that I'm a part of, like we were all really kind of surprisingly well suited to this lockdown because we already had the things that, you know, we were all craving for. Like, I wish I had more time just to stay at home and do all these projects that I got. And then wish granted, like, here's 7 months of just like, you can't go outside.
Yeah.
Like we're all uniquely suited for this challenge as everyone else is losing their mind. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm good. Like, yeah. Did you see the invention I just built? How about that chair? Do you like that chair? That was pretty cool, right?
I was like, I'm totally used to being isolated. I sit around here all day making projects, talking into a camera. I never go out and see people.
They said, like, people? I like, to, like, who are these people?
I like to say, you know, I like to see, I'm tired of seeing 2D people. I want to see the 3D people. I've heard they exist,
yeah,
but I haven't seen them in a long time.
Right. As I say that, kind of tongue-in-cheek, it is nice to be able to go out and socialize, but I just thought it was interesting how more people turned to, like, the crafts that we had already been, you know, investing in like years prior to, and now everyone's kind of been opened up to it. I thought it was a very interesting and unique situation. And like you were saying, I saw my viewership go skyrocket in like the middle of the lockdown, like especially one video that I did just kind of like took off, and like I got like 40% of like my subscriber base just in that time frame. Like, yeah, a lot of people are stuck at home and need something to watch.
I think the people who were able to really thrive in 2020 financially are people who were able to pivot and to change what they were doing. And if it didn't make any sense for me to just keep doing business as usual, coming up with a new project, here it is, here I built it, and just showing the same thing but barely even acknowledging what's going on around us. I didn't want the topic to be what was going on around us, but I definitely wanted there to be a distraction from all of that. And I think that came across pretty clearly.
Well, you definitely distracted a lot of us.
Yeah,
you know, for sure. From work too, because I got stuck at home working for my job that I had in Tennessee. And when there's downtime, it's like, oh, let's see what Steve's up to. And then you kind of go down that rabbit hole.
Rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm, and you're like, Oh, I watched all Steve's videos this week. Wow, I've done nothing for real work.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it
was not true. You supported a creator. That's what you did. You did.
See, there
part.
You go. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I did, actually. But the creator also supported us because he made that that one awesome video of how to basically fill your shop for under $1,000. That was, I think, one of the first videos I ever saw of yours, Steve. And it was awesome because, you know, and I've heard it from my other maker friends. They get comments all the time. Well, if I had, you know, the SawStop 5000, I could make the same thing too. If I had all the, you know, Ryobi or not Ryobi tools, but if I had all the Makita tools, I could do the same thing. If I had a, you know, joiner, planer, and you showed basically the YouTube world. Like, yeah, you don't need all that stuff to make some fine furniture or fine projects or whatever. You know, you do need some money, but you don't have to buy them all at the same time. You buy like you showed us, you can buy them a little bit at a time. And you know what, it took a year, I think is what the video was. It took a whole year, but, and you showed how to save that money to buy that tool.
There's a lot of different, you know, methods to acquire tools, but it struck me, well, a long time ago on my channel, it's actually like about a year or so into after I created the channel, which is probably around 2009 or so, is when I came up with the name Woodworking for Mere Mortals. And the whole concept there was, at that time, most of the woodworking you saw would have been on television, and it would have been Norm Abram and these guys with real high-end tools creating high-end projects. And I thought, I don't have that. I'm just a guy in a garage. And so that's why I came up with this thing, because I knew people it appealed to people to see a guy making things with a regular set of power tools that wasn't outlandishly expensive. And so over the years, I've just been able to refine that format to whereas now it's very clear that this is a channel for beginning woodworkers. And then when I started coming up with my online courses, I wanted to appeal to somebody who's never even held a hammer before, you know, who has never done anything at all, and tried to explain that you don't need a lot of tools, you don't need a lot of money, and you can do it in really limited space. I know, because I've worked in very limited spaces before with just a few tools, but you don't need all of that stuff or any kind of fancy education to produce some really cool projects and have fun doing that along the way. And then it was eventually when I came up with that idea of, I just wonder if I could set up a shop and actually build projects for under $1,000. And so I still maintain that tool list. You know, every month I update it because the prices and tools are always changing. Tools are always changing model numbers. I don't know why they do that. Like every month there's like, they changed the model number. Like, stop doing that. You're adding all this work. But over the past, well, now 4 years, I've still managed to keep that tool list under $1,000. So it is possible to do woodworking, at least get started in it and make some fun projects inexpensively.
Well, you were one that helped me out that, you know, I didn't need to get all the fancy tools. You know, here's the basics, and you can make some really nice things with those. And going along those lines is, can you think of any, maybe one or two examples where you, somebody reached out to you and said, hey, because of your video, I am now, you know, making things, and I'm actually, you know, I'm not just a maker. I turned this into a business, and it was all because of your video. Have you?
I can think of one example of that. I get that. Yeah. I mean, I get that a lot from people who, you know, kind of considered me the gateway drug of woodworking sort of, but they're always like, oh man, I started doing this. I got hooked watching those videos and, you know, just made it clear that I could do this thing. And then I started making my own. Some people make some of the projects that I've designed, and then they'll sell those, and they probably make them better than I do even. And I like to see that too. I think that's really cool to see when people can earn a living, at least, or even just a side income.
And it must feel really good to, you know that you've inspired many people to, you know, find their inner woodworker.
Yeah. I mean, it's very satisfying. It's probably the most satisfying part of my job is being able to change lives. And I think it's kind of like woodworking itself. I don't think, at least once you get to doing it for a while, the intrinsic value of woodworking is about much more than building something. It's about the time that you spend in your own head. It's about the time you spend in your shop. It's about planning things. It's about procedure. It's about having a full set of things you want to accomplish from beginning to end and finishing all of that. And oh, by the way, you'll be left with a project that you completed at the end. But that's, to me, that's not even the most important part. It's the process is really what's rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, you learn a as you say, it's like you get so much more out of it than just this tangible product. But though that's like a lot, one of the things that I really enjoy, I like having that physical object that now like it exists in the world where it didn't. Right. But also you're learning, like I said, you're learning the skills, you're acquiring this new knowledge that, you know, now it's yours. You can't like, it can't just like go away unless like you just don't do it again and then you forget it. Like, oh yeah, I remember I did this one time, but I can't remember how I did it. Right. Completely different story and sidebar. But yeah, just that's why I enjoy doing it as well. And like one of our previous guests, Ben Neiman, he even said that like I do a lot of different things. I usually don't do the same project twice. And that's because like I'm constantly wanting to learn different techniques and, you know, how to approach different projects in different ways and, you know, learning these new skills. And I mean, that's why I do woodworking now. That's why I do video. It's why we're doing podcasts now. I enjoy the learning process for sure.
And a lot of that. It's definitely a learning process through the whole thing. And I mean,
yeah,
it's kind of funny at the beginning, we were talking about your new podcast and you're like, we're still trying to figure it out. And
I'm like, that's us in a nutshell.
But it blew my mind because I'm like, but this is Steve Ramsey. He should, it's been, you know, it's part of his being. He should, it, you know, he touches it, it's gold.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's,
is that what you like about the podcast too? Is because it's something that you don't like know all of already. It's new for you, right? Like this is like kind of the same like feeling that you got in the beginning of doing like YouTube or even woodworking, right? Like kind of recreating that sense.
Oh, very much so. I think that's what appeals to me the most is that it's just a brand new challenge. It's, you know, tangentially related to making content, video content, and it's talking. And in some ways it's a little bit easier because I don't have to worry about a video component, but in other ways it's a lot more challenging to be able to just speak and to talk to somebody for an hour, as I'm sure you guys are well well aware of. And just to see how we've progressed in, you know, in the past what, 4 or 5 months I guess now that we've been doing this, just to see how much better we're getting at is a good thing. I always believe that, you know, as long as you're moving forward a little bit at a time, it doesn't matter how much you're moving forward at each time, but you're going to get there. And I know I can, one of the things I like to do is look at woodworking shows, well, any YouTube show really that's been around a while, and you can look at their content, you can sort it by date. And so I always like to go back and see the very first video that,
you know, I do the same thing. I did the same thing with my, I don't know if you've seen Drew Fisher's shop, but he was the one that I binge watched his entire collection. And we had him on here as guest number 3 or 4 on the show because I met him at Workbench Con last year, a year ago, last weekend. And it was an eye-opening experience to, you know, just talk to him and learn about, you know, where he started from, because he's only been doing YouTube for, well, now I think it's going on 2 or 3 years, but it was just amazing to go back and see his first video. Yeah. And now you look at it and you're like, when you do that, and I do that with pretty much with everybody's YouTube channel.
I do too. I do the same thing.
Because, well, you want to see them grow, you know? I mean, it's, you know, when we saw Norm Abram or, you know, on TV, he was already
out of the gate. Yeah.
He was already a great woodworker.
Yeah.
You know, so seeing somebody start from, you know, I don't know how to make a box joint to, you know, now they're making hand tooled dovetail joints.
Yeah.
It's really neat to see that progression.
And that was one of the things that was great about early on YouTube is that everybody was just trying to figure it out. And so much these days about YouTube is it's starting to look more and more like television. And so a lot of people are coming out with, you know, a full fleshed out idea of what their show is going to look like. They've got, you know, entire crews behind it. And so they're producing bam right out of the start with a very well produced product. And yeah, it's not quite the same to look back on one of those channels and see their first videos as it is somebody, you know, 5 or 6 years ago.
Right. Well, the one person that jumps at it at me is April Wilkerson. Mm-hmm. She is now on.
Yeah, she's doing a TV show or something.
She's doing a TV show.
Assembly Required.
I'm surprised. Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know. That surprises me, really. But I guess, you know, if she enjoys doing that. Because it seems like the kind of a, these days, it seems like kind of an odd progression to go, because YouTube is such a different platform, such a different thing. And you can reach so many more people on YouTube than you can on TV. So it just seems.
Right. But I look at it this way. If somebody came up and asked me, do you want to work with Tim Allen? You know, Tool Man.
Did you guys watch the first episode, by the way, since we're talking about it?
No.
No, you haven't watched. I watched it. It is it's all right. It wasn't what I was expecting. I'm sure if it wasn't, you know, COVID times, it would have been a much different competition. Though I gotta get, so they had to make these leaf blowers that also melted ice. So they had a flame, essentially they were a leaf blower / flamethrower. And the leaf blowers that they came up with that they fabricated were really cool looking. It was just different. It was not entirely what I was expecting it to be. It almost was kind of like force funny a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like it was okay. I wouldn't say that it was like completely trash, but it was like I feel like it missed the mark a little bit.
I've had a couple of offers for TV shows, people wanting to talk to me about doing various ones on some of these networks. I've never even heard of them, actually, but I'm a little out of the loop on them. I mean, Discovery Networks, they've got all these different ones that they do. Oh, yeah. But every time I've thought about that, I thought, well, that takes me away from my audience. And I don't think that would be beneficial to my business, or definitely not my audience, because my channel would suffer if I were to do that.
Right. And you invested so much of your time, money, sweat, tears into what you're doing to, you know.
Yeah. I mean, this is just cultivating the brand itself was, you know, is very intentional. And I want people to know what they're getting when they see my videos and my show.
So since you've been pretty much around since the beginning of YouTube, not the very beginning, but close enough. Where do you see YouTube going in the future? Do you see it becoming more of a like we would see on the network TVs, but it's more of an on-demand thing where you could search and now you have a good quality production? Or do you think it's just going to kind of continue the way it's going?
Well, I think there's going to be, and what is emerging is both are happening. And so there's a large part of YouTube that, I mean, you look through now, like the trending videos, the top videos, they're all basically TV shows. They're like late night comedians and late night talk shows that are putting clips on there. And so a large part of YouTube is being viewed by people who aren't really invested in YouTube. They're not really watching YouTube. They might, somebody sends them a link, hey, watch this funny video. They'll watch the video and they're out. They're not really part of the YouTube culture. But at the same time, anybody can still pick up a camera and start shooting or documenting whatever they're doing. And there is sort of a level playing field in the fact that the algorithm doesn't care whether you are Will Smith, who's creating a YouTube channel, or a guy with a camera in a garage. You know, the algorithm will dish out videos to people who are interested in that content. And so I think there's just always going to be that room. It's definitely is looking a lot more like TV. They're even having their own, you know, YouTube produced productions. And I think that if anything, kind of, well, I think that the golden age of YouTube is over. I think that was probably around 2015 would have probably been peak YouTube, where everybody, it seemed like, was on YouTube and everybody knew the creators, and there was a lot of camaraderie there. And
right.
that has changed as it's grown bigger. And I mean, I still love YouTube. I think it's the best place to go. I think it's the best place to reach an audience that anybody can do. It's just so even and fair.
Yeah. The only thing that kind of scares me is little peek at possibly the behind the scenes of what's going to be happening with me is I'm thinking about just videotaping me building my shop from blank basement, and it'll give me great content. But the one thing that I fear is doing something wrong. Not that, you know, making it not look good, but literally doing it wrong, like, you know, wiring up some electrical box totally incorrect.
Yeah.
That's what kind of, you know, scares me.
But don't worry, if you're doing it wrong, someone will tell you.
They will, and that's why I've kind of learned to pretty much, it's important to stay in your lane about what you're good at. And for me, I know that something like electrical, even though I know I'm doing it right, there's going to be a guy telling me I'm not doing something right with it. So as long as I stick to the woodworking, I'm good with that. The way I approach a lot of these things is like, if I needed a faucet repaired or a faucet replaced in a sink, I could either fumble around with that and do it myself, and it would probably take me all day because I would get very frustrated and I'd have to make several trips to the hardware store and it would still be dripping and I would be cursing and it would just, or I can value my time and hire a plumber who has been doing this day in and day out and can get in and get out and just be done with it in like an hour, you know? And so to me, it's more important to just stick with my skill set and do that rather than try to get into all of these other things. Because I know, yeah, I've had experience doing the exact same thing. I try to like expand a little bit, and yeah, I think I'll do a little bit of, put in a new electrical box, though. That's going to happen off screen.
Right.
That's what I was really thinking. It's like, hey, I put this in myself. Here's the new lights. Not telling anybody how I did it because, you know, you may have done it wrong.
Here's an example. Just recently, I had built these cabinets for a laundry. It's not a laundry room. It's a closet that we have, and it's very small. And so I built these standing cabinets that would anchor into the wall. I put one of them over an outlet. You know, it's got the plate on it and everything. It's an outlet we never use. And there's one like 2 feet away from it that the washing machine is plugged into. But 20 years we've lived here, we never used that outlet. I thought, okay, I'm just going to put this cabinet there. Oh my God, I got so many comments from people like, you know, that's against the code to cover up. I'm like, well, I don't know these things. I don't care. What are you going to do?
First thing turn that me I was in? Thinking of when you said it. I was like, Dave, you can't do that.
I know. So yeah, I if I had known, I wouldn't have shown that, you know, but there's still things like that that'll come up that I didn't know, but I'm not changing it. I don't care. I mean, what? If I ever need to get to it, I'll just pull the cabinet out. Cabinet off. That.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Like how many people put like the dresser or the bed in front of a,
yeah, exactly.
Don't say anything. Like,
yeah, no, that is true, but you can move the dresser.
Yeah.
Well, you can move the cabinet.
Move the cabinet. True. But you can't
pull it out.
Yeah. All right, gents. Well, we're at that time that we got to pay some bills. So we will be right back after these messages with our special guest, Steve Ramsey.
If you are in need of a little happy artwork for your home, office, or shop, then be like Jacob and I and many others by stopping by the Creative Ward Gallery on Instagram and Facebook. There you will find many beautiful Bob Ross inspired artworks by the very talented Marion Ward. All are hand painted and no two are exactly the same. So join Jacob and I in our support of this happy little art gallery by picking up your work of art, or work of Marion in this case, for your space or as a gift for family or friends. You won't be disappointed. Mention our podcast and you'll get free shipping in the United States. That's the Creative Ward Gallery on Facebook and Instagram. Has your cutting board seen better days? What about those pesky sweat rings on your fine furniture? Do you like to read but find it difficult to hold the book open without your hands getting cramped? Well, friends, we have the place for you. Search Handmade by Vincent Ferrari on your favorite web browser, where his motto is custom for everyone. Whether it's custom woodwork, laser engraving, or jewelry, what you want is only a request away. So visit friend and supporter of the show, Vincent Ferrari, on Instagram and the World Wide Web. Mention code MFIO and Vincent will give you 10% off.
And we're back with our special guest, Steve Ramsey. And also my Steve is still here too. So
your Steve?
Good thing for that.
I like that.
My Steve's here.
Oh my God.
You know, I got to say that was super cool to have that break. I've been on a lot of podcasts and nobody has ever offered to take a break so that we can go get a drink of water or go pee. And I really appreciate that.
They want just like a 2-hour gauntlet, like, go, we have to go get this done.
It's like, I'm drinking coffee here. I never planned this out.
Well, we do put commercials in the middle. So it kind of, you know, helps out Jacob and his teeny bladder. And it also helps us make money. So, you know,
it'd be a little counterintuitive not to have a break.
Yeah. You know, if we were doing an hour,
it helps all parties. Let's just put it that way. It helps all parties. Really.
If it was an hour show, okay. But, you know, I think our longest show was almost an hour and 50 minutes. And
wow.
The conversation just keeps carrying on. And
so we just don't know when to shut up sometimes. Let's just put it.
Yeah, that's pretty much, you know, that's definitely it. But it is, like Jacob said, we're here with Steve Ramsey. And I have to say, Steve, that during the pandemic, and we've already kissed your butt in the break, but I'm going to kiss it some more. But my favorite video of all times that you have done was your parody video of, you know, how to make money from YouTube in, you know, 10 minutes or something like that. And it was hilarious. And I sat there, and every time when I was actually down in the shop videotaping something, it was, damn it, Steve told me not to do this. Steve told me not to do this. Damn it, I can't, you know. Oh, I got done with the project. Hey, I really liked it. Oh, I can't really.
We've all done those things. That's the worst thing, because I've done them myself. And I just, over the years, you just start to see people who make any kind of woodworking or maker video, there's tropes that have developed in this whole genre, you know.
And I just watched it. I showed it to my friend Mike, and we were both kind of laughing. And it's like, what you need is a beard, and the bigger the better. And it was great, Steve. And you know, during the time that you made it, we needed some, you know, some comic relief.
And make sure you say at the end of the video how much you enjoyed making this video and how much you can't wait to do it again.
I do the same thing. I really enjoyed this project. It's like, I don't think anybody cares.
You know, it's funny because what did I do? Oh, I made a jewelry box for a coworker. And there was, I actually enjoyed learning the little intricacies of the project, but the time that it took to make it and figure everything out that went to it, I'm like, I'm never making another jewelry box again. That was a pain in the butt, but I may, you know, because the first one is always, you know, the first one you make should always be the, okay, I could put this in the burn pile.
Right.
And then I'll make the next one, you know, and
the next one will be better.
Definitely better. But that video, I can't tell you how many times I've watched it and how many times it's gone through my head.
Yeah. I was just trying to collect all those things that I think we all tend to do. I think the thing that struck me the funniest, and I don't know why this ever developed as kind of a woodworking trope, is the throwing the wood down on the table on the workbench.
Yes.
You see that a lot? I don't know why people do that. They're like, boom, boom, boom. It's like, yay. I'm like manly man.
Right? Why so violent? Like,
just set it down. It's okay.
And as soon as, and I did that. So one of our friends, Nick from Build Dad Build, he made some wine carriers or, you know, wine displays. So he drinks whiskey. So I made him a couple that he likes to do shishugiban.
Oh yeah.
So I told him, I said, here, and I sent him like five, and I made one out of walnut and said, don't burn this one. And I totally forgot where I was going with this. What happened?
I'll bet he just burned it up.
Yeah.
We were talking about tropes, Steve.
I'm sorry. Oh, and throwing it down. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. And so when I didn't make a full video on it, I just made a quick YouTube or Instagram video. And I remember I threw every one of them down. and then topped it with the walnut. And then I heard your, okay. And I was like, oh crap, man, I did that. Oh, I, you know, but you're right. I think everybody has done one.
I remember you doing that and then actually texting me, or we were talking about it. Like, you're mortified. Like, my God, I did everything he did in that video.
Well, I'd like to think that it's more of a loving look at the YouTube woodworking community than an indictment, because I've done these same things myself. And I remember years ago, I had to catch myself because I would be building something and then I would tell what I was going to do next. I'd be like, well, now I need to cut this piece of wood on my miter saw rather than just cutting the piece of wood on the miter saw. So it's all of these things that kind of, you know, it takes a while to realize how YouTube is such a visual medium, and really that's all you got to do is just show what you're doing. And, you know, I always find that less is more on YouTube. Although now I think the videos are getting longer and longer on YouTube, but I still like to try to keep them concise, you know?
Yeah. Because I remember talking to people at Workbench Con, and at that time it was, do not make a video over 11 minutes, but you need that 10 minutes so you can get monetized, but don't make it go over 11 because it just drops.
Yeah. You know, and now that's 8 minutes to get the mid-roll ads, you know, so there you see a lot of people trying to get to the 8 minute mark just so they can have that mid-roll ad. And it can be annoying.
Yeah, well, the ads in the middle are annoying just because they're not planned. That's the only thing that,
yeah,
I mean, I think you might be able to plan them.
You can set where you want those to go if you're doing those mid-roll ads. And I honestly haven't seen them because I got the YouTube premium, so I don't see ads at all on YouTube, which is because I watch a lot of YouTube, and I don't think I could stand to have to sit through all those ads on YouTube.
It's a pain in the must be nice.
Yeah, must be nice. Believe me, I see those mid-roll ads. Mere mortal, you know, the WWMM, you know, money.
I'm flexing my YouTube premium. I got the premium. Yeah.
I'll pay $10 a month for it.
And actually, this kind of segues perfectly into the next thing I want to ask you about, which is YouTube Shorts. Because we mentioned that we see YouTube videos going longer, but I also see it going the other way as well, is that we're seeing a lot more short form. So has been your experience with YouTube Shorts and that new format?
Yeah, that's interesting, because I try to at least dabble in every new feature that YouTube comes out with. I think it's really important if you're a regular content creator to stay on top of these things. And right now, I think that the Shorts could be the biggest change in YouTube ever, really. It could be huge. And so I've experimented with it. The idea with the Shorts is that it's a 60-second or less video, has to be shot in vertical format, which automatically turns a lot of people off. And because it's just meant to be consumed on the phone, it's meant to be, you watch one, you scroll through to the next. It's basically YouTube trying to cash in on some of that TikTok audience. Yeah. And so they're trying to do this similar thing. Here's my experience with it is, at first, there was a lot of backlash from people, and you got to be willing to kind of accept that people are going to, you know, this is the worst thing ever. What's wrong? How don't you know how to shoot a video in horizontal format? And I think that the problem is that it's still in beta in the US and everywhere, actually, except for India. So those short videos can be seen on a desktop computer or laptop, which is, then you get the weird, oh, it's a vertical format on a horizontal screen effect, and it doesn't look right. But eventually they'll stop showing those on desktops, and they'll only be available on phones, because, I mean, most people watch videos on phones. I think it's like 55 or 60% of my audience watches videos on their phone. So it's obviously the way people want to consume videos. But it took a while. I started posting those for a week just to experiment with it and to see how my audience responded to it. The first one, overwhelmingly, all the comments were just hate. I hate this so much. Don't stop. You're ruining it. A lot of people thought that it was like I'm never going to do regular videos again. This is like, I've switched to only doing these shorts now. And so how can you do this? You're ruining it. So yeah, I was losing subscribers to the channel. I don't really care. You know, if they want to leave over that, that's fine. I don't, subscriber number is kind of a made up silly number anyway. But over time, after a week or so, we kind of weeded those people out. And then it was just all positive people who understood what it was, what was going on there, and actually enjoyed watching those. So I'm going to keep pursuing it and trying to figure out exactly what I want to do with it. At first, I thought it would be useful to do like woodworking tips, but then I realized that no, tips in 60 seconds is kind of dumb. It doesn't really work. Anytime I've tried to do, hey, a quick tip, it's usually ends up being 5 or 6 minutes, you know, because you're really, for woodworking, you got to get a little bit more detailed than that. Yeah. So I'm still kind of experimenting with the format and what I want to do with it. But I think it's pretty exciting. And I think as a creator, if you're going to do it, you should probably start jumping in on it now. I think it's better to try it rather than sit around and wait until everybody's doing it and then you're lost in the crowd.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, try and get on it on the ground floor before it gets oversaturated.
Well, that's the one hard thing about YouTube is you want to do everything that everybody else is doing, but you want to do it differently. And who says it? Pretty much anything that you can think of has already been done.
Right.
Somewhere. Yeah. So nothing is really new. It's just a new take on something that somebody else has already done.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I kind of pulled back from doing a project-based videos a few years ago, really. I've kind of, where I would do an entire project in one video, and it kind of opened my eyes when I started doing the lockdown woodworking that I'm really more interested in kind of telling the story of woodworking rather than telling the story of an individual project. And so for people to see kind of what I do on a daily basis in my shop and designing projects and standing at a computer and editing and all that stuff is interesting for me to do. And what I found is that my audience engagement is way higher. The watch time, the amount of time that people will watch the videos is much longer on those videos than on project videos. The downside is you don't get as many views, or I don't get as many views on these kind of videos, because most of the channel people are expecting to see a project video. So the views are really down, but I feel like I'm reaching this core audience that I really want to engage with, rather than the phony subscription number, which doesn't really mean anything, because you see these subscription numbers, but then you look at how many people are actually watching the videos, and it's two completely different numbers. So I think in a lot of ways, a subscription is just like a like, really. People subscribe just to, I like it.
It's nice. And it means kind of something, but tell me if this metric seems familiar, like, views from subscribers, 80% non-subscribers, 20% subscribers. Right. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I'm finding with the shorts, which is really interesting, is that the shorts will get low view counts the first few days, even the first week. And then like 6 days later, all of a sudden there's a spike. And that's when YouTube decides to put it in the shorts shelf, which is on your phone, where they have all the shorts there. And so just random people start watching these things. So I think that the key to producing a good short is one that appeals to as many people outside of woodworking as possible. And that's why I don't want to do tips and those kind of things, because then it's only reaching that limited audience. I think you have to think about those as a completely different thing, completely different audience, and approach it from that way.
Well, if I can suggest your next project video, I think you should do an end table with epoxy.
A coffee table. Yeah.
Yeah. It needs to be a river table, damn it.
Yeah, river table.
That's a lot of epoxy. Yeah.
Right, a lot of epoxy.
Yeah, yes, it is.
That is. And epoxy is actually really expensive.
Yeah.
And you have to know how to work with it. So it's.
But actually, like, I know it, like, it's seeming very cliche, but I actually enjoy working with epoxy. I enjoy that fusion between man-made and natural. That's just me. That's my own personal preference. And like my belief behind it. Like, and I don't use it for everything. I still enjoy full projects that are just totally only natural wood, but it's something about it to me is like that. It just like this kind of like magical ingredient turns from a liquid to a solid. And then it's like, you can paint all sorts of different colors and you can suspend things in it. I enjoy the amount of possibilities that you have with it. And again, like I enjoy that fusion. I feel like it's a good contrast. Like, you can actually highlight the wood with it and not just make it like a secondary note.
Right. I think we're seeing a lot of that in woodworking, a lot of this fusion between different materials. And I think it's really exciting to see people mixing concrete and wood and steel and wood and glass and all these different things. It's an interesting time.
And don't forget to call it the mid-century modern.
When are we getting to late century modern?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, when are we going to get to late century modern or this century modern?
Right.
Because it took me a while to figure out what actually mid-century modern was. And I'm like, mean like 70s stuff?
No, it's actually a very specific style that I don't think a lot of people really understand. If you've ever been to Palm Springs, there's like the hub of mid-century modern architecture, especially. And that was, at the time, I think that it was real revolutionary, but it is, I think it's become, a lot of people use it for a lot of different things now and just call everything mid-century modern.
Everything's mid-century, yeah. I'm like, no, this is Steve modern, and I don't know what you want to call it, but that's...
yeah.
This is my modern, damn it.
Yeah, I'm just putting together some pieces of
some stuff together that looks good. I don't know what style it is.
Like, you got a connection, you got a line, you have another line. Look, there's your table. Like,
yeah, there's not a lot to it. That's kind of it's what woodworking is, really. I mean, I always like to say that woodworking is, it's like the simplest thing to really understand. The basics of woodworking are, anybody can understand how it works. And I think that's why I like it, is because it's easy, and yet it still remains challenging forever. It never stops being challenging. Every single project comes with its own set of challenges and its own hurdles to overcome. And I make mistakes on every single project. And I think that's just part of the process. And that's part of the fun in some ways, is figuring out how to move past those mistakes when they happen. And that's where I think it's that unique blending of your hands and your mind having to be active and trying to figure out solutions to problems.
And well, exactly. I mean, we had, like I said, our sister podcast is what I would call it. Because they had their challenge last year. And I remember, Sam Wilkinson.
Oh man.
Remember that one, Jacob?
Yeah. I remember Sam's.
I think Sam was trying to submerge a light bulb in epoxy.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened.
The epoxy went exothermal and it started developing these bubbles and cracks all over the place, but it actually ended up being a really happy mistake because it gave it like a really, like it was submerged underwater effect, and it looked really cool at the end. Even though it was a mistake, it was like, it really wasn't at the end.
And yeah, it actually looked like somebody just threw it in the water, and it has, you know, when you throw something to bubbles, and it was. So, very, I mean, cool. You know, sometimes your mistakes actually, you know, come out to be, oh, this is a new technique I should use.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
we
tend to focus a lot on our mistakes, and it's just, it is part of the process. And I think that's what makes things look handmade. And it's, for the most part, only we know the mistakes. It's like that light bulb in the epoxy. Nobody has to know that's a mistake. Who's looking at that? I think that's a really cool intentional thing that was done, you know?
Well, I can't remember who said it, but they were talking about, you know, hand cut dovetails. And, you know, if you want to do hand cut dovetails, that's great. But he said, if you look at real old furniture, he said, those dovetails aren't, you know, perfect.
No.
it's not a fine woodworking. They just did dovetails because they worked. They kept the wood from moving, but they weren't, you know, these pristine things. So if you really, you know, want to use a dovetail, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, perfect.
I think that most people would be surprised if they really understood. You look at some antique furniture at how, by today's standards, it would look sloppy, you know, because most people with modern power tools can make things with far more precision than was going on in even just, you know, 18th or 19th century, where it was all done with hand tools. And they were even, they're making furniture, you know, craftsmen to sell, and they had due dates, you know, they had to get these things done, and they took shortcuts a lot of times. And you'll see that if you really, you know, deep dive into some of this furniture, they're not always perfectly square, and there is gaps, and there's all these, yeah, all these things.
You know, what was crazy is I went into like one of these boutique home craft furniture stores. And I'm walking around just because I'm curious and I had some time to kill. And I'm looking at this table, and this table was like $4,000. And I'm seeing cracks, I'm seeing knots, I'm seeing voids. I'm like, we're stressing ourselves out about trying to make these perfectly precise pieces with like no gaps, everything fitting precisely. And this cracked up piece of crap is like selling for $4,000. Like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah, see, you just got to crack up your furniture a little bit. I always say that just go with it. If this ain't working out, I just call that just rustic appeal. You know, it's rustic charm on that thing. And if you got a bad spot, you just put that side against the wall. That's all.
I do remember there was some place, I think it was, I was stationed in Virginia, and I went to West Virginia. We went to go on the Blue Mountain Parkway, or not Blue Mountain Parkway, but the parkway that goes along the Appalachian Mountains, Skyline Parkway. Anyway, and we drove by this place, and there was a bunch of wicker furniture out front and some other things, and it says brand new antique furniture.
It's just clickbait on the side of the road. They want you to come see what it is.
Yeah, I'm like, brand new antiques. It didn't make sense at all.
That's pretty funny.
But yeah, some of these things that we see, and you know, there was some place I went to, it's like a, you know, private sign, do not read.
You're right.
I just love that one. It, you know, kind of dad jokes kind of thing. Oh, but yeah, Steve, we definitely appreciate you coming out and chit-chatting with us today. I don't know, Jacob, you got anything else that you need to, you know, inquiring minds want to know?
I mean, we could sit here and chat with Steve all damn day long, but I feel like we should respect his time, and let's get into our maker shout outs. I feel like this would be a good point to get into that. What do you say?
That sounds good to me, my friend.
Right, and so since we have a guest and it's only polite, Steve, who would you like to shout out today?
I'm not the guest. I'm the co-host.
Not you. I mean him. Like the important
the other
one.
Thing, the important one. I got you.
Well, I'd like to kind of, I've shouted this person out before a couple of times, actually, but it's because I love her work so much. And her name is Jolene Brables.
And oh, Jolene. Yeah.
Do you know her? And she's got, it's a small channel, but oh my God, the toys she makes are just beautiful. She makes wooden toys, and she just works alone. And I think that, to me, this is somebody who has so much talent, and it's wonderful to see somebody who is willing to put their talent on display on YouTube for the world to see. And I think more people need to see that channel. I just love it.
Yeah, she's really good. She does, like she said, she does all those tools, and she has a really fun personality. She does donates a lot of those toys to charity as well. And yeah, she has a really, I've been following her videos for a while now, for like, I want to say at least like the past year or so. And I keep hearing her name actually come up a few times now on like different podcasts that I've heard. And I actually really like it, because like you said, she deserves a lot of attention, because she does really good work, and she does it for a really good reason too. So
yeah, there's something that's very appealing about somebody who's very focused on what they do too. It just are really good at this specific thing. And in her case, making these toys is really good.
I'm trying to look her up. How do you spell her name?
J-O-L-I-E-N, and her last name, Brables, B-R-E-B-E-L-S.
Okay. It's also for when I, you know, have to type out these shout outs.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I still can't find her, even though you spelled it. But anyway, that's just the mix of the game. Jacob, so who would you like to shout out this week?
My shout out today is a friend of the show, Justin Offler at Bare Naked. He just did this is a couple videos ago. He did those ring stands or ring holders that he did. He did three different ways. So he did one where he laser cut it out, where like two different pieces together. He did a 3D printed one, and then one where he turned it on the lathe too. And I thought it was cool. It was a quick, simple project, but I enjoyed how he showed the three different processes. It doesn't necessarily have to be just one way. There's many different ways of attacking a problem. And I thought that this video really encompassed that, and just his unique way of thinking about things as well. And I know Justin listens occasionally or frequently, infrequently, occasionally, kind of often, but I enjoy his humor too. And I can see a little bit of that as always in his videos.
He has a very, very dry humor, and it can be really funny sometimes. Really funny.
Yeah, but I enjoyed the video, and I enjoy his the project and his process. It was really nice.
Very good.
How about you, Steve?
Okay, well,
other Steve,
the non-important one. I got you. So the persons that I would like to shout out, they're really not woodworkers, but they technically are makers. They make videos, and it's basically they were making these videos for their daughter because she had to have several surgeries. I think they were heart surgeries, but I'm not sure. And it was just a way for them to let loose and, you know, make something fun with all the tragedy they were going through. So they, you know, turned a bad thing into a good thing. And it's a Team Balmert. I think it's B-A-L-M-E-R-T. And some of their videos are hilarious. They, Team B-A-L-M-E-R-T. And the poor husband, he gets suckered into so many weird things that he was the one that did waxing paper or that, you know, for the hair waxing. And at first his wife was just, you know, waxing randomly all over him. And then he did like 240 waxing strips, and they're just, it's just great entertainment. And they seem like a really cool couple. So, you know, they're not really what we would consider in this realm makers, but they do make videos and they make people laugh. So to me, they're makers.
Yeah, they make entertainment for sure.
They make entertainment, and they are funny, and it's pretty much unscripted. So it's, you know, the reactions you get are the reactions that are true. It's not, you know, oh, I didn't like how I reacted to that. I need to retake that. I need to retake. Nope. No, these are so, and I would love to have them on the show just because they're just kind of cool people. But
good deal.
Yeah, so that's what they said. So Team Balmert. So
Balmert, one word.
One word.
Exactly. All right, cool. So do you wanna ask the question, or should I?
Did I ask last week, or did you ask last week?
I don't remember. I don't think it really matters.
I don't think it really matters. So Steve, we ask every one of our guests, we give them a choice. It's either how did you meet your significant other, or who is your celebrity crush? Now, we've given you a heads up on this, so you've had the entire show to think about it.
And I haven't, been thinking about it.
Yeah, haven't been distracted.
But you know, a celebrity crush is hard because if I say one person, it's gonna, you know, make all the other celebrity crushes disappointed. So, you know, I think who do I really want? But I've got a man crush. I'm gonna be, put it out there. And you're probably not gonna know who this is, but it's Kane Hodder. He's a stunt man, and he played Jason on the Friday the 13th series, and he played in the Hatchet series, and he's just this big guy, but he's so interesting and fun, and he shows up at fan conventions and things, and he'll choke people. That's his thing, is he'll choke you. And so it's like my goal in life is to be choked Right Around the Neck by Kane Hodder. You know, he's this enormous dude. And so, you know, people pose for pictures. Everybody, young and old, men and women, they all want to be choked
out. To be choked out by Kane Hodder. Totally not where I saw that going. I'm not going to lie.
Either. I mean, you know, I was thinking of a Homer Simpson, Bart Simpson kind of thing, but.
It's kind of like that in a way. You know, yeah, it's just it's my life goal at this point.
We know how
what 2020 brought me to.
Right, we know how you feel about horror too. So,
exactly.
So, yeah. If you've watched the if you've been following the channel for a while, you know.
Yeah. What do we know?
Who you are?
What do we know?
The horror movies that I watch.
We'll talk later.
I was just trying to, you know, for our viewers that, you know, don't know. Please elaborate.
Oh, I love all things horror. In fact, if you want a recommendation, there's a movie that just, it's going to be my favorite film of the year. I know it, even though we're only into February. It's called Saint Maud. And I've already seen it like 3 times. I love it so much. It's so creepy and so good. I just love it.
As he says this, and there's a machete in a picture behind him.
Yeah, you know, that's from Friday the 13th. That machete, I made that, and then the frame that is dripping blood to hold this magazine. It's a Fangoria magazine that I bought back in the 80s. I've been into this stuff my whole life. And that one is signed by Tom Savini, who did the special effects makeup on Friday the 13th Part 4. And that's what
cool.
And so that was why I framed that thing. But yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm not a fan of horror movies. Never. I think
not your jam.
No, well, I think Chucky kind of ruined it for me. you know, before little. Yeah, that little. I mean, I never went for the slash and gore movies. I like the Stephen King's where he actually, you know, would make you think. And you know, so it one of my favorite Stephen King movies was it was Langoliers.
Oh. The Langoliers. I remember the Langoliers. Yeah, that was a good movie.
That was a good movie. And it was a good book, too. It was the only movie that I actually read the book first and then saw the movie.
Right. Dean Stockwell totally made that movie.
And then I'm just sitting there going, that's not in the book. That's not in the book. Right. That's when I stop reading the book first.
Yeah, you got to stop comparing. Yeah.
You know, right, and you know, it's like people read the Harry Potter books and they're like, that's not what happened in the movie.
Right.
And it's, you know, so I stop ruining movies by reading.
But, you know, the length of a movie, a full length movie, is really a short story.
Right.
So if you really, that's why if you want to translate a book to a movie, you have to cut so much out of it, or, you know, make it into like a limited series or something, which is.
Yeah. That's the only way to really do it justice. And even then, like, many parts can be omitted. The only movie that I saw that was the same as the book was The Babadook. And if you've seen the movie, you
get love that movie. I've never read the book.
That movie will haunt me till the day I die, because that one was just creepy. If you don't know what it is, it's this Australian horror movie, and it is the creepiest thing you will see. And like, it's right up there with like The Ring and The Grudge and all stuff like that. Just like, it's not like always in your face of like gore and horror and all. It's like almost like build up suspense. Like, you see the shadow and all you see is like the darkness just kind of slowly creeping in. It's like that building suspense of dread and just like fear. And that's the whole thing that really made it. And there's a whole deeper meaning into a lot of the things that happen within the movie too. But I remember I started watching it at night. I got like halfway, clicked it off, sat on my bed, didn't sleep, and then finished it in the morning. Like, I couldn't do it. I'm like, no, tapping out. This is me tapping out.
Yeah, I think,
can't do it.
I think the movie that haunts me the most out of any horror movie that I saw was, I think it was Pet Sematary. Wasn't the main character in that Herman Munster? The guy that played Herman Munster?
Wasn't it? That was Clancy Brown, wasn't it?
Or was it Chucky?
I can't remember who was in that. I just don't remember Dee Wallace in it. It
might have been Chucky. But anyway, there was this. I just remember it was the guy that played Herman Munster. Mm. And So he was down on all fours looking for something under the bed. And this, I think it was Chucky, maybe, possibly. But it came out and there was a scalpel. And this, whatever it was, cut the Achilles tendon. And it just, and I was, just saw that. And I was like, oh, God, that's got to, oh. And I was like, all right, I'm done watching horror movies.
Fred Gwynn, that's who that was.
Yeah. That's the guy's name. Thank you. Yeah. But yeah, that was that. But I like the suspenseful ones that are kind of, they don't have the horror and gore, but you have to think about them and they scare you mentally. Now, Stephen King pretty much mental anyway, but he still makes some, he makes some good books and, you know, there's a lot of good movies.
I mean, the Shining will be as a classic.
You know? Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That is definitely a classic. So I think we have hit our
time. On that happy note.
On that happy
note. Don't you love it how no matter where I am, I always seem to drag it into horror movies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, I'm sure one of your special superpowers right there.
Yeah. So what do you got planned for your, I mean, we know that you're doing the shorts now. So is there anything that you have upcoming in your future that, you know,
what I'm working on right now is actually my project right now is I'm making this hall tree, which is a word, a phrase that I didn't even know what these were called. It's like an entryway thing when you open the door and it's like, you know, if it was a bigger one, it would have like a boot bench underneath it, you know, and you hang your coats and things on it. And I made this, the first part of that video. Again, I'm just making a little bit. And then when I'm done, I'll just post the video. The project's not done, whatever. But I was trying to figure out what are these things called? And I saw that, oh, they're called hall trees because I was looking at pictures of them on Google. And then it occurred to me, how did I live 53 years and have never known what those things were called? Isn't that kind of, it's like, how do I not know that? But here we go, 53. I'm still learning things. There you go.
Exactly. Still figuring it out, right?
You never stop. Hey, I like that, Jacob.
Yeah.
There was a lot of times that Steve actually said figuring it out. So, you know.
That's right. You just get those little clips, those little bumpers.
Yeah. And it's just it's really bad because now when anybody says it, I'm like, hey.
Right. So, Steve Ramsey puts a seal of approval on the podcast.
I'm Steve Ramsey, and I'm a maker figuring it out. There you go.
There we go.
Thank you.
We used to do that on the radio, and you know, we, you know, for like breaks and stuff like that. This is Steve Ramsey, and you're listening to T102 WABT FM.
He just gave me a great idea. What we get like every maker that we've had on here so far and like give us that clip and we'll just do a whole string of it. That's our promo.
Yep, pretty much for the end. But yeah, you're episode 41, Steve. So so we have 11 more episodes to go before we gotta get on our tails because we gotta get working because we're supposed to have some kind of
possible challenge year
for the episode 51, right?
Yeah, episode 50. And I think, I don't know, Jacob and I have to talk about it. We may just be releasing episode 0, which it will go along with the way that we do things, especially figuring it out, and kind of like what we were talking about earlier with YouTube. We sort by date and you go down and look at the very, you know, the first video to see how crappy it was.
And you don't have your first one posted, do you?
Nope. No.
Now everybody wants to hear it.
We got to build interest.
Yep. And so it was, so you could, it's bad.
You could do like a reaction to it. You know, you play it along and then you stop it and react to what you were saying.
And I was thinking about doing that too. So that wouldn't be a bad idea.
It's a good problem to have, right? Because if you don't want your show to look the same way it did back then, otherwise there would be no growth in it, right? We've come so far.
Yeah, actually, at episode 11, we changed our entire format. We changed the name of the show. We rebranded the whole thing. So that's how far back the first one goes. It was actually the old show that we called, Maker's Town Hall.
Oh.
Yeah, and that didn't go over too. I mean, it went okay, but it just, well, Jacob came on board and I wanted him to be part of we want to be partners.
Right. The concept in the beginning was a little asking for too much too soon. I would say,
yeah,
you know, asking for an audience to join in when, you know, no one really knew who you were. But, I mean, but like I said, it's all about progression. And, you know, speaking of progression, like look at progression, we've got Steve Ramsey on our podcast at episode 41. Yeah. So that if that's not the definition of progression, I don't know what is.
Yep. Stop. Yeah. I think we've kissed his butt enough.
Stop it.
Now, if we can only get Norm Abram on here.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Doesn't seem to do any appearances of any kind, no. Does he?
Yeah. No, pretty much no. But
I don't think most people know who he is anymore. I think that's the kind of a thing. I think that he's kind of gotten lost over the past 10 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's very rarely on This Old House anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's also a whole bunch of people on This Old House that I would love to have on here. And you want to see a starstruck guy. That would be me. And like, oh my God, we got Tom Silva on? You got to be kidding me. And no, we don't have Tom Silva scheduled. Just so you guys know. All righty. Well, I guess that's it for today, fellas. Jacob?
Yeah.
We want to thank Mr. Ramsey for coming out. And
absolutely.
Hey, I want to thank you guys for inviting me. I mean, this is just a ton of fun.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. Steve, not that we have to ask this question, but where can people find you?
They can find me on Google. Steve Ramsey, you'll find me. I don't need to plug anything. You guys are doing a great job.
See, that's how you know that you've made it.
I appreciate that.
Just search me on Google. I'll be there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Jacob, where can we find you?
You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I have a Patreon and a Buy Me a Coffee and also a Teespring. So
TikTok. Yeah, definitely go. What about TikTok?
I did, and then I stopped it. I think I will get back into it possibly at a later date. Yeah. It was just, I wouldn't say that it was bad, but I just it was oversaturating me for things that I wanted to do. You know. No TikTok for the time being. Definitely no Twitter. But yeah, so that's where you can find me at. Steve, right, where can they find you at?
You can find me at Wolf Woodworking Creations on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. There's not a lot on YouTube, but Steve Ramsey supports me on YouTube. So
if Steve Ramsey does, then you should too.
Yes, you should.
That's because I'm a maker. Figuring it out.
Love it.
Yeah, that's great.
I love it. That is going to be a promo.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Jacob. All right. So take us home, son.
I'd be happy to. So here at Makers Figuring It Out, it is our mission to educate, motivate, and inspire. And we hope we've done that for you today. This is Steve and Jacob reminding you to keep learning, keep being motivated, keep getting inspired, and keep figuring it out. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.